Before I begin, I want to acknowledge that many of us here are showing up this morning enraged and reeling from news of yet another shooting in a place of worship, and this time it is a synagogue. The implication of violence against Jewish people in this country carries with it history and symbolic significance, and it can't be ignored. The Jewish people are our brothers and our sisters in the great family of Abraham. The stories we read from our Old Testament are their stories, and we are knit together as one family in God's great promise through these stories. So, as St. Matthew's has been exploring together the Old Testament stories from Genesis to Joseph, we come here with this context today. And Joseph, the story of his brothers, is a story about violence among kin, and so it is not very far from us today. The Hebrew Bible, our Old Testament, does not always present its heroes as perfect people. And the family of Jacob is no exception. It is almost as if the narrators of these stories know that we will never grow out of our propensity to distrust, dishonor, become jealous, and hurt each other. And so the stories of the first people who walked with God are riddled with their failures, as well as their hard-won transformations. In these stories, God takes regular people, like the sons of Jacob, and molds them into something new. And now when I say regular, you might be thinking that kidnapping your brother and selling him into slavery is far from a regular thing to do. But this kind of violence is likely not that irregular in the ancient Near East, and we have our own versions of that today. But what we read this morning is only the very beginning of a story. And the power of this tale is the transformation that all of these brothers go through. You see, after being kidnapped and sold away, a series of bizarre and unlikely events happened to Joseph, culminating in a request from the Egyptian pharaoh himself. Pharaoh has had a dream that no one can interpret. And he hears about this Hebrew slave languishing in prison who might be able to help him. He calls on Joseph, and Joseph tells him that God has already told him what he is going to do. The dream is about a famine, and Joseph interprets it so precisely that Pharaoh puts him in charge of preparing for the entire famine. After 7 years of good crops, famine does indeed strike the land, and Joseph is in charge of all of the grain in Egypt. In fact, of all of the grain in the known world, since Egypt is the only nation that has prepared for this 7-year famine. Joseph is now the second most powerful man in the known world. More than a decade after selling their brother into slavery, the hungry, tired, thin, weak sons of Jacob journey to Egypt, arriving at Joseph at his doorstep and begging to buy grain. I wonder if you have ever met someone again from your past, someone who wronged you or hurt you or betrayed you. I wonder if you can remember how that felt. Not just what you thought or what you did or said, but how it felt in your gut, in your lungs, in the palms of your hands. Joseph has been at the bottom of a pit. He has been marched by force to Egypt. He has been a slave. He has been assaulted and wrongly accused. He has been in prison and he has been forgotten for years, but now he has also been rich and powerful and wealthy for 7 years. How hard had Joseph worked to be free of these memories? How much does the anger rule his life, just barely under the surface? What happens to him when he hears those voices, recognized from the imprint of them on his mind, when they circled above him at the edge of the pit? What happens then is a weird, hot and cold back and forth that goes on for nearly 8 chapters of Genesis, in which Joseph treats them harshly, tricks them, but then goes back on his harsh behavior, lavishing them with gifts, all the while not telling them who he is. He accuses them at first of being spies, throws them in prison, and then allows 9 of them to go back, loads their donkeys full of grain and all the money they brought to buy that grain, but one condition, that they bring Benjamin back with them. Simeon he keeps in prison as collateral. Confused and afraid of this man who can't make up his mind and acts rather erratically, the brothers go home, convince their father not easily to let Benjamin come back with them, and they return to Egypt to buy more grain, once again starving. When Joseph sees Benjamin again, his full brother, he hosts a lavish banquet for everyone. He is overjoyed, and he is not speaking harshly to them at all this time. And he keeps sending Benjamin huge portions of food from his own table, and these brothers are all tremendously confused. And then something happens that doesn't seem to make any sense at all. Joseph sends them all home, loaded up with grain again, and he frames Benjamin for theft, placing his own silver cup in Benjamin's bag. He calls them all back, demanding that whoever stole his cup be made his slave, and Benjamin is found out. Judah rushes to Joseph, begging him not to take Benjamin, explaining how he is the last son of his mother, how his brother was lost and his mother died at his birth, and his father will surely die of sorrow if Benjamin is now lost to Egypt. Judah begs Joseph to take him as a slave instead. It is a far cry from all those years ago when Joseph sat in the pit. Then Judah was only interested in profit for himself. Now he is willing to offer his own freedom in exchange for one of his brothers. Then and only then does Joseph reveal himself to them. Then he stops speaking only in the Egyptian language and he switches back into Hebrew. The brothers are so stunned that they don't even believe it at first. They can't comprehend what is happening. "I am Joseph," he says twice. "Tell me, does my father live?" The version of this story that we might know from Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, or some other form of fiction, or even from our lectionary cycle, suggests that Joseph is this incredible, forgiving, holy character who has powers beyond our own to let go of terrible things because he was able to trust in God's plan without any questions. But that version of the story might be held over our heads when we're having a hard time forgiving someone. But that's not what's actually written down in Genesis. Yes, this is a story of incredible betrayal and costly forgiveness. This is a story of a hero who listened for God and stuck to God's promise in dark, painful times and eventually reconciled with his brothers. But this is also the story of a deeply conflicted man, a man who is at war with himself as he encounters his rekindled trauma. His attempt to take Benjamin into captivity seems to suggest that he knows no other way to befriend this beloved brother. Joseph is fighting deep within himself a battle that we all face, to become our enemies or to walk a different path. Joseph almost chooses to become what his brothers once were, but Judah's transformation moves him. Judah's willingness to sacrifice himself pierces a hole in his resolve, and he lets go. He breaks down and he weeps. Forgiveness, even for Joseph, is hard, and it takes time, and it takes a toll, and eventually it is hard won. This is not the story of a man whose connection to God is stronger than ours, or whose willpower to do the right thing is more extraordinary than ours. It is a story of a person who is just as messed up as we are, just as broken as we are, who fought the same fight to heal from his wounds. But beyond that, this is a story of a God who works through our own imperfections, our failures, and our stubbornnesses, our gifts, and our weaknesses, to bring about a promise to preserve life, though we all seem intent on destroying it and each other. This is a story about a God who doesn't give up, not on Joseph, nor Reuben, nor Judah, nor Simeon, nor Levi, and not on us, even in times like these. Amen.